Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you with us today as we talk about child rearing today from a kind of a different perspective, I think from the perspective of the child. My guest is Heather Shoemaker, author of It's Okay to Go Up the Slide, Renegade Rules for Raising Confident and Creative Kids. And I hope you'll join in as we move along today with your own thoughts, questions, or comments. Do you think our children's time is overscheduled? Do you think children need more unstructured time? What about homework? How much homework, if any, should our children have? Our author has some definite thoughts on that. Number to call for you to join in, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, title, The Larry Mueller Show. I'd love to hear from you. Heather Shoemaker, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
You know, I have a 12-year-old who's in seventh grade, and I'm also chair of the school board at her school. So this book was really interesting for me. And I hope a lot of parents and a lot of teachers get to read it.
Yes, it's really geared for both the teacher side of life and the parent side of life, because those folks are partners and they need to be acting as partners for the good of the children.
You know, the title of the book, It's Okay to Go Up the Slide, and I remember as a kid going up that slide.
Yeah, were you told not to?
I don't think so. There wasn't anybody, you know, there were no adults watching. I just thought, I got to go up the slide.
Yeah, well, you're demonstrating what every child will do if given a slide at some point. They will go up it, from the slide part, not just the ladder.
Yeah, and you say it's okay for that to happen and okay for children to do that. You employ what you call renegade rules. I kind of like that. Explain about renegade rules.
Yes, well, I think the whole idea of the renegade rules, it's based on child development, but really when you look at it, as you say, from the perspective of the child, you end up turning all these parenting truths that we've been told all our lives, you turn them upside down. So, for example, instead of safety first, it's safety second, or don't talk to strangers becomes yes. Talk to strangers, it's safer that way. Or do your homework becomes don't do your homework.
So that's pretty different from what we see in most schools and most times.
Yes, it's pretty much a counterintuitive, countercultural message, but I think it's an important one for us to think about.
Well, why is it so important for example to have recess?
Yes, well, you know, recess really is part of how a child learns in the younger years. Most schools have recess still in elementary school, but actually a lot of schools around the country have eliminated recess, including as young as kindergarten. So they're in school all day without a break. And also what's happening is that kids are having shorter recesses, less frequent ones, and that they get more organized, whether they bring in, the school sometimes brings in recess coaches, gets kids in organized games, or substitutes gym class on, say, Tuesdays and Thursdays and only has recess the other days.
So what's wrong with that?
Well, kids need a break. They need a break socially, emotionally. They need a break physically. But they also, they need that break to be able to concentrate back in class. There's research been done that shows that the longer kids have to wait for recess, the less they can actually focus on the school lessons that we're trying to impart. So they get fidgety, you know, the behavior crops up, and their memory and focus, their actual executive functioning skills, they don't get as sharp when they don't get that frequent recess.
And it is the most fun part of the day.
It is fun. Yeah. The thing about recess is that we think we've got so much curriculum to jam into the day that we don't have time for kids to just run around. But it's more than running around. Kids need that psychological break from being told what to do. So it's not always how much they're running, although, of course, there's concerns with obesity epidemic. But it's not just the physical release. It's that mental release, that emotional release of adults aren't telling me what to do right now. I can be with my friends and relax for a few minutes. And they come back refreshed.
And I want to bring up one more thing. There are many people want to visit about this, but I wanted to bring up one more point, and that has to do with homework. And you suggest banning elementary school homework may be a good idea. And there's some research that may support that.
Yes, what they're finding in the research is that the academic benefits of homework are highly age-dependent. So in high school, there's some benefit. Middle school, a tiny little bit, but in elementary school, here's what they're finding. And this is not just one study, it's a review of 180 research studies on homework. They're finding there's zero correlation between time spent on homework and academic benefit in elementary school. But at the same time, the kids are developing negative attitudes towards school, towards learning, and towards homework itself when it comes at a too young age.
So you're saying, so kids from kindergarten through what, fourth grade, fifth grade?
Yeah, it's going to vary from school to school, but on the whole, anywhere in the elementary school age, fourth grade, fifth grade, wherever it ends in your district, is about the time that that kids benefit by having free time when they're off school to follow their own ideas and play. And that when you get to middle school, you can begin to do some practice homework to have the kids start to learn time management and all those other good things. So when things get serious in high school, they're ready.
And you point out, I think, and rightly so, I'm thinking about my own experiences with my own child. If there's homework, I mean, there's a finite, there's not a lot of time that you have with your child anymore, it seems like.
Right. No, kids don't have a lot of time with their families. They have long days, especially with working parents. But even if they're picked up pretty early in the school day, after school, they're often scheduled into structured activities. So family time, and kids go to bed early when they're young. You know, they don't have that many hours. Some have 2 hours at home, some have 4 hours at home, but it's not a lot of waking hours to fit everything they need to fit in, which includes family time and running around and playing and following their own ideas.
Yeah, yeah. David and Slinger, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm calling because I really have been thinking a lot about this, that there really should not be homework, as you, your guest is saying, at the younger ages. There's just not enough free time for kids. And I sometimes wonder if the schools are trying to make up for what they think the parents aren't doing. And maybe the schools should spend more time helping the parents focus on education. Thinking back to my education, that was a big deal at home, but we didn't have homework. This was in the 60s. But the focus was on learning. And we know that parents' involvement in teaching and education is super important for kids doing well. And just a thought.
Yeah.
I have more things I could say, but I would take up most of the morning.
So. David, thank you so much. And I'll tell you what, I'm with you. In grade school, I don't remember having homework until maybe eighth grade. Comment on that, Heather?
Yeah, a couple of things. One is, you're right, homework has become, there's more homework now than there used to be, than when we were growing up, and it's also coming younger and younger. So it's very typical for five-year-olds to have homework in kindergarten, and even if there's not homework assigned in preschool, parents are demanding it. So I think it's part of sort of a fear-driven culture that our kids will fall behind or they won't do well economically, they won't do well in high school or college if we don't get started now. And that's actually a misguided fear, but that fear is very strong. And as far as what your caller said about, you know, family support and how can families support kids in school, they're finding that one of the best ways, one of the strongest ways to have that support is a combination of reading for pleasure at home, so either having the adult read aloud and or have the child read if it's pleasurable. And also putting the kids to bed early, even earlier than we think, because our kids are chronically sleep deprived. And although there's no research that supports the academic benefits of homework, there's plenty of research that shows the academic benefits of getting a good night's sleep.
Yeah, very, very good points. Mike in Cambridge, it's your turn. Hello, Mike.
Hello. I just want to say that I'm highly supportive of the guest's principles and in both respects. With recess, I think it's very important for people to be able to explore their own physical being and its relationship to others and their surroundings. And I think it enhances a lot of creativity in terms of physical skills. In terms of homework, the only modification I might make is what we did with our children was to have homework available. In other words, not assigned, but available to them. Because some kids might not have the social environment where they can get the things that they enjoy being able to do. But if they can select things and take them home and make homework fun, make learning fun, I think that's being a very positive effect.
Oh, thanks, Mike. Comment, Heather?
Yeah, well, he's got his finger right on it. I think one of the things that my book suggests is making homework optional and joyous in the early years. Because kids already, they're wired to learn, and they bring joy to learning if we let them. But some families may want to have some homework-type resources. Teachers can offer that, provide resources, but not make it mandatory, because a lot of the stress that we're seeing with kids is coming from these nightly battles where the parents feel that they have to support the school system and the teachers, and they force the kids into the homework chair at the kitchen table. And there's this unhealthy relationship that can drag on night after night, not just in the early years, but on into the high school years.
Yeah, yeah. Edie in Janesville, thank you for calling.
Hi. First of all, I love the title of the book. And yes, I too ran up the slide. It was one of my favorite things on the playground. I'm what's called a teaching artist. I go into classrooms, and through creative dramatics, my background is in theater. I work with teachers and with kids through storytelling and drama, teaching different curriculum subjects. So, like, we will learn the water cycle through our bodies, acting it out with our body, that kind of thing. And I work a lot with Head Start kids, and I've been doing this in this area since the early 1990s. And the biggest thing I've noticed is the more structured kids get, it's affected their creativity in a really negative way. I just came from two Head Start classes up in Sun Prairie, and these kids, their ability to imagine is not what it was even 10, 15 years ago. And I think all of this overstructuring is really having a negative effect on kids. I've been in classrooms where teachers will not allow kids to go to recess because they didn't finish their work in time. And so not only are these kids frustrated because they don't know how to do the work, which is why they didn't finish it, now they can't go outside and have that release time. And it sounds like you're preaching to the choir. How do we get all of these messages out to the people who really need to hear them?
Yes, well, several things that she brought up there. One is just on recess again. It's important that kids do not get recess taken away either for behavioral issues or for academic reasons. And those are the two main reasons why kids are deprived of recess. It's usually the kids who need it the most, who are the most fidgety and talking to their neighbors or poking their neighbors that need the break, and yet they're often the ones that are retained. So it really stunts their learning and their ability to do their best that they can by depriving the kids of recess. Also, a note on her comment about creativity being diminished when kids have too much structure in their lives. Another big thing that happens with the kids, they don't have time to cope with and practice with their emotions and their social skills, especially these young kids. They need a lot of time sorting that out. And their emotional competency and their ability to solve conflicts with peers and other people is greatly diminished when they don't have some of that free play time and everything gets too structured. As far as her final...
I agree completely. Yeah. sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just going to try to answer your final big question about how do we reach people beyond the choir. Well, I hear that my host here is on a school board. I think really the more we talk about it and dare to question the fact that things that are considered so sacred as homework might need to be questioned, the more that message gets out, more people begin to hear it. And I think it's a ripple effect that will start with teachers and with families and with school boards all over the country.
Yeah.
Well, there was a time when we used to do it the right way. I mean, Larry said that too. We all went to recess more as kids. I remember not having homework. I remember role playing constantly as a kid, which I think all helped make me who I am today. How did we get away from that? And one thing I do want to point out is I've been in the classroom for decades, and I do not fault the individual teachers at all. They are really working so hard, and it's an uphill battle for them. People from DPI keep showering more and more responsibilities on teachers. And I swear these are people in DPI who have never taught in the classroom, who have no idea what they're doing. And in one of the school districts I'm working in right now, there are 27 to 30 kids in third and fourth grade classrooms. That's insane. That's absolutely insane. You know, we do need a revolution that has to go all the way up to DPI. I don't know how to do it. Shake these people up, and more people who believe as we do need to get on school boards.
Thank you, Edie. And again, a follow-up comment, Heather? And DPI, by the way, is the Department of Public Instruction, if you were not familiar with that term.
Right. I think the biggest problem is that the adults are not talking to each other. So parents are feeling the stress at home, and teachers are feeling the stress at school. But the adults, when a child is crying and saying things like, I hate school, and really having a hard time showing that stress, we as caring adults need to go talk to each other, because the kids can't do it themselves. So our family, for example, went and talked to our children's elementary school teachers and explained how we were going to support our children at home and what they needed to be doing. And a lot of people, and in our case, that meant banning homework in the elementary years as a family. And other families who've tried this have reported that as soon as they speak up, usually they're terrified of doing it. But when they make an appointment to meet with the teacher, usually the teacher is an extremely caring individual who loves learning, loves this child, and did not mean that level of stress to be happening when they assigned, given homework assignment. So I think we need to begin to talk.
Yeah. Thank you again, Edie, for calling. I want to give Michelle and Kenosha a chance to join in, and we'll do that in just a second. Just to remind you, our guest today is Heather Shoemaker. She is the author, It's Okay to Go Up the Slide, Renegade Rules for Raising Confident and Creative Kids. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 1 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn and her guests look at teacher shortages in the metro Milwaukee area and what's being done about that. Right now, we're talking with Heather Shoemaker, author of It's Okay to Go Up the Slide. It's her Renegade Rules for Raising Confident and Creative Kids. Great to have her with us. And Michelle in Kenosha has a something
Hi,
to share.
You.
Let's go there. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, thank you so much. What a great guest, and thank you, Larry, for having this topic.
Mm-hmm.
I would say I totally agree with the other callers and your guest that fear is the base of so much of this. 10 years ago, my younger two children's school banned recess completely, and I mean completely, and at elementary level, K through 5, it was directly because they wanted to improve test scores. That was right when No Child Left Behind was implemented, and this was tended to be a lower-income population school with a lot of ESL kids, English as Second Language. Everyone. Teachers were not in favor, families were not in favor, and because of Wisconsin laws, the previous teacher said DPI didn't help, but it was our district administrators that everything fell on deaf ears. There was no advocacy. We were very loud, and there was no advocacy. It was just a decision made by a principal, and that held for 3 or 4 years. And when that person left, it did change. But it was so sad, and it was a terrible experiment on the kids just to improve the test scores. And, in fact, they did not improve, which is not a surprise. I wonder now if my youngest, who was part of that and never really knew a real recess, if that is why this kid is not too crazy about school and doesn't like being in school and only goes for the social aspects.
Yeah.
My older one, who didn't go through that, didn't have all the testing, didn't have the lack of recess, loves school so much that that person is a teacher right now. Mm. And I think this is part of the fuel for homeschooling parents who see things a different way and can't get any, can't be heard or things like this, and it's driving that growth in homeschooling. And I strongly support public schooling. I'm trained as a teacher. And I used to argue that adults got breaks, coffee breaks, little walks, snack room breaks, but the kids got nothing. They always had to be learning. And that lack of supervision that your guest spoke of, lack of highly structured activity is so, so important. So I just think this is so wonderful that it's being discussed. And perhaps there needs to be more, I don't know what you would advise, your guest would advise to actually getting Wisconsin DPI to take some formal stance on recess, because to my knowledge, there wasn't anyway.
Yeah.
But I appreciate this so, so much. Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling, Michelle. And Heather, a comment from you.
Yes, well, stories like that are all too real and all too tragic about schools banning recess altogether. And it's so ironic that the reason that we often, as adults, ban recess in a school is to improve academics or to improve test scores. And as your caller said, that doesn't happen. It's actually the opposite. Kids need the recess to improve their learning. You know, some districts do have recess policies that they've put in place. Sometimes those can be effective. I have resources in the book that are meant for people to help families and teachers and schools put some strong protections in place. There's a lot of families in different parts of the country. If you Google, you can say parents fighting for recess, and you can connect with those people these days, even if they're in Florida and you're in Wisconsin, to find out what worked for them and try to help the situation in your own local school. So it's getting the message out at all different levels.
Well, you know, we're talking homework, we're talking recess, but there are many other, maybe you should talk a little more about the rest of your book.
Yes, well, these topics seem to dominate, but the book has about 20 unorthodox renegade rules for parenting and raising kids. Do you want to dive into talking to strangers?
Sure.
So that's one that always gets people's attention because we've always heard the message, don't talk to strangers, but it doesn't work. It doesn't help keep kids safe, and it isn't true. So what we're finding is that strangers are most likely to be the helpers who help a lost, scared, or hurt child. And unfortunately, the research and statistics will all bear this out, is that it's people that the child already knows, family, friends, acquaintances, that are the ones that are most likely to hurt a child. So the message isn't going to keep kids safe. And also, young kids are told this message at a very young age. They often are completely confused what a stranger is. They'll think it's somebody big and mean looking, or it's somebody that it ceases to be a stranger once the person tells you their name.
What do you do with kids, or how do you train kids, or what do you tell kids about strangers or not?
Right. Well, obviously, we want to keep our kids as safe as possible, and here's some things that can help. One is to change the message of don't talk to strangers, just to say don't go with a stranger. Don't get in somebody's car, even if they give you candy. Just the way you'd explain, if the house is on fire, leave the house, don't even take your toys. Just some basic matter-of-fact boundaries. But what really helps keep kids as safe as possible is for them to gain street smarts. Give them a practice interacting with a wide variety of people so that they can develop their inborn sense of instinct and uh-oh feelings and survival. They're finding that kids who have street smarts, that ability to judge possible danger, are a lot safer than kids who've been over-sheltered. So I don't know about your neighborhood, but when I walk down the sidewalk, kids, and I say hello to a child who's out in the front yard, the child will usually freeze and look away.
and wait until I'm past. And that's the opposite of street smarts. The child needs that practice interacting with folks.
Let's turn to Michelle and Eau Claire next. Michelle, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thank you, and thank you for the call. I appreciate it. I'm just making a comment to a couple of the other callers and Michelle. It's not only the homework and not having the playtime. They are overwhelming these kids with the testing. Testing starts in second grade for math and language arts or for reading. And my son has testing next week. When you get into middle school is fifth grade here to eighth grade. It's three testing times a year. And it's twice when you start out second, third, fourth grade. Then you get into middle school, he's like, you know, they're so exhausted and already contemplating this testing, which starts next week. I think it's gotten overrated. They're also trying to vote a bill in the high school for another test besides the SATs and SATs?
ACT.
ACTs, all those. Another test for the kids to graduate. I mean, it's getting ridiculous. We're not going to college here. We're trying to learn to read, write, and arithmetic. And I think it's way too much pressure. And, yeah, these kids need to get out and release some energy. And the teachers do the best they can do, but teachers need a release as well. You know what I'm saying? For those kids when they're outside, you know, on their recess, the teachers can unwind as well.
Yeah.
So I'm just making the comment along with that. And, you know, it comes from home, too. The parents can't use it as a babysitting mechanism. They have to be active in their child's life as well, in the school process, and, you know, reading and writing and all that as well.
Thank you so much for calling. Heather, a comment?
Yes, well, you know, she's pointing out another of the stressors that kids are facing today in the schools. And I think the amount of testing is really, again, driven by fear and a desire to quantify children's learning. And we're wonderful human beings that learn in such a variety of complex ways. It's very hard to pin us down in how we learn. But the tests are an attempt to do that. And I think it's most teachers I know, they're required to give the tests, but most of them will say it's a waste of the kids. You know, that was a wasted week, and they want to get back on real learning the next week.
Janet and Wapan, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. As a retired teacher, I just wanted to say that all the people I've worked with have agreed with all the basic things that have been said. But what's frustrating is the teachers' hands are tied in dealing with most of these issues. So I think it needs to be addressed at the higher level, at the legislators, to take a look at what's mandated.
You agree with that, Heather?
To some extent, yes. I mean, certainly the frustration is very much there, and especially the younger you go with kindergarten teachers. There's a lot of teachers that I've met who've told me they've retired early because they can't stand the way they have to teach kindergarten now when they know it's not what the kids need. So we're losing some really good teachers at that age. But there are things people can do. For example, I live in Michigan, and in my local area, there's some first and second grade teachers who looked at the research on homework and decided to stop giving homework for their first and second graders. This was not something that came at the higher level. It came at the classroom level. So there are things that you can do as a teacher. In most cases, there are certainly schools this is not true, but in most cases, the teacher has quite a bit of say over how much homework or if they give homework. Or they could make reading itself be homework, read together as a family. That could be considered the homework.
Mm. Yeah, I like that idea. Thanks, Janet. Joan and Eau Claire, hi to you.
Good morning, and good morning to your guest. What does your guest feel is an appropriate amount of homework for a sixth grader? When one of our children, who is an A student, was in sixth grade, his teachers, and this was the team concept, assigned 2 to 2.5 hours of homework per night. Yes. And that's not including practicing their musical instruments.
Oh.
Yes. Well, no, she's raising what's happening all around the country. In this case, a sixth grader getting 2 to 2.5 hours of homework a night, not counting additional music practice. That's pretty typical. I recommend that sort of this practice period of homework in middle school doesn't even need to begin until seventh grade. So I would say a sixth grader doesn't need any homework. And if they do, a little bit, even in seventh and eighth grade, the point is not to crush them with homework. This is sort of a tender in-between age. A middle schooler has a lot going on socially and emotionally and hormonally, and they're not that different than the younger kids. They can cope with more, but not that much more. So a little bit of worthwhile assignments can be useful in seventh and eighth grade and maybe a little bit in sixth grade, but even what they're finding in high school is that anything more than 2 hours loses its academic benefit, even for the teenagers.
Even in high school?
Yeah.
Yeah. Joan, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call. By the way, we still have a little time. You can join in with your own questions or comments. I haven't given the number in a long time. It's 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. I was interested in your comments about signing, about parental signing for memory work or finishing assignment. You have a take on that I think is interesting.
Yes, I have a chapter called Don't Sign Here. You know, in addition to having a lot of homework and younger homework, there's a trend that's happening in our schools where parents are being required to initial or give a signature on their children's spelling list, on their math worksheet, on their music practice log, on their reading log, all these different things. So if you have more than one child, the parent in the evening is just a signing machine. you know, when I was in school myself, we had parent signatures for two things. One was report cards, and one was field trips. And other than that, there weren't these signatures.
That's the way it was for me, too.
Yeah, and I think it's a desire to somehow make a stronger link between home and school, but I think it's a misguided attempt. From the parent perspective, it feels a bit like a jailer, you know, quick sign here, and it doesn't promote love of learning. It also, I think, undermines trust in the relationship between the child and the parent. It's a message saying to the child, we don't trust you. We don't trust that you did your assignment until somebody else signs off on it. We don't trust that you'll want to do it. We don't trust you care about your own learning. And, you know, kids are being asked to get these signatures, and the consequences are dire if they don't. In many cases, they lose recess if their mom or dad does not sign their spelling list.
Mike in West Allis, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. I just had a question for the guest. It was just an interesting topic. My wife is a teacher. The question I had was, how do you go about then engaging with children that don't necessarily have that drive at home? My wife would give homework to children because she thought it would be advantageous to them because they were falling behind and they needed skills and they needed repetition at those skills. But they weren't. If she hadn't issued the homework, the parents probably wouldn't have encouraged the child to do the learning at home on their own. I'll take the comments off the air.
All right, good point, Mike. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, and this is a concern many people have, and of course, dedicated teachers will try everything they can to try to support the child's learning and support that involvement at home. I think that the best thing that a teacher can ask of the parents is to help them with reading together at home. That's especially at these young years, that's the foundation of so many skills. So if making a signing that is what's going to make it happen, then assign reading together, but make sure that there's some pleasure in it. I think sometimes we try to fix all of the families that really are not functioning well. I don't, you know, whether they're mm-hmm. high income or low income, we just try to fix it all by having tests and assignments. But we have to remember that kids who do not have a strong family or a well-functioning family at the moment are in survival mode. You know, sometimes they're faced with parents who are unstable or there's alcoholism or who knows. There's all sorts of things kids are struggling with. And they need, if anything, less of this homework pressure because they're not getting any of the other stable influences and emotional support they need.
Karen and Madison, thank you for calling.
Hey, I wonder if you had touched on this. I volunteer at my grandson's grade school. He's in first grade. They have lunch at 10 to 11, and then they go out for recess. And the entire time they're eating lunch, someone yells at them to keep eating so they can go outside. And I've heard often about recess before lunch, and I wondered if your guest talks about that at all in her book.
Mm.
Yes, well, I think we all have memories of lunch ladies, and lunchtime can be a bit stressful for kids, too, depending on the situation. There's all kinds of ideas about whether you should have recess before lunch, after lunch, and so on. I think the most important thing is to have recess scattered throughout the day. What many schools resort to, just to pack the day as much as they can, is to have what's a lunch-recess combination, whether recess comes before or after. It's a sort of a lunch hour that includes recess and eating. But that gives both of the biggest breaks in the day right at the same time. And kids really need a morning break, and they need an afternoon break. Lunch could be the middle of the day break. So I'm not a big favor of combining lunch and recess, although it's a very common practice.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. All right, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Karen. And Sheena in Wind Lake, thank you for calling.
Hi, I just have a question for you on what you feel on how much homework they should give children who they consider special ed. I have a son who is dyslexic and also has a speech impediment, and they give him about 3.5 hours of homework a night.
Oh. Boy.
Oh, boy.
All right. Yeah. Well, you know what? And I also have a son who is dyslexic, so I understand some of the struggles you're talking about. A child who is struggling with any kind of special need, they need to be supported and have the least amount of stress, because they have enough stress in their life anyway. That doesn't mean that we don't have expectations for them and we don't work with them and try to help them do their best. But for let's say a dyslexic child, their brain is actually wired differently, so it takes them many more amounts of effort for them to try to learn to read than a normally reading child. So they're much more exhausted by the school day than any other child. And when they come home, the last thing they need to do is do more of that and feel terrible and feel stupid. They need to be able to find a place where they excel, get rejuvenated for the next day. And again, reading with the child and in a pleasurable, comfortable situation is going to do more than drilling things when that child is overexhausted and has other needs that they need to fulfill.
Yeah.
Who would I talk to about trying to fix something like that in my area?
Right. Well, every place is different, but in general, a child with special needs will have some sort of legal protection through an individual education plan or something similar. And you can start by having the plan tailored to the child, including having homework banned in the plan.
And that's possible in a school district?
It is possible. They're meant to be individualized plans, and so what's best for the child needs to be taken into consideration legally.
Sheena.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, and please follow up. Let me know how that goes. I mean, it's going to be a long-term kind of thing, but I'd love to hear back from you at some point about what happens in that circumstance. You know, this has been a wonderful conversation, Heather. I thank you so much. I'm actually going to be handing out some copies of your book to our teachers and school board members to take a look at, because I think there's a lot of... There's a lot that we could all learn from your book, and thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you, and thanks for being one of those ones to start the conversation.
Appreciate it very much. Our guest today, Heather Shoemaker, who is the author of It's Okay to Go Up the Slide, and we have a link on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show to the book. Your local bookstore is certainly going to be able to get you a copy of it if you'd like to take a look at it. And I think it will provide a lot of interesting conversation, both at home and in the classroom with your teachers and maybe with your school board as well. So great to have her along, and maybe we'll get her back and talk again with her. We certainly had plenty to talk about. And there's always the plenty to talk about when we have Dr. Apple Bodemir with us as well. She's a dermatologist, assistant professor in the Department of Dermatology, and we'll be getting an update on dermatology with her. What's going on with your skin? It's a good indicator of your age and your overall health, and we'll talk about what happens to skin when it ages and how to take care of it. Stay with us.